noticed. He couldn't bear the thought of sitting and drinking with his stinking lordship. As he walked through the camp, he noticed the men glancing sideways at him and furtively crossing their fingers to ward off witchcraft. They were afraid of him, the mangy dogs, as well they might be. Let them cower before Lovelane the Mighty, master of the powers of air. At the edge of the camp, he paused, debating. As badly as he wanted to get away from the army for a little while, he was quite simply afraid to go out alone with a Derren so close by. Finally, he went to his tent, ordered his manservant out, and lay down, fully dressed on his blankets. Noise filtered in, men laughing and talking as they strolled by, swords clanking at their sides. Once, Lovelane's trained mind had been capable of shutting such distractions out. Now they drove him to rage. Fists clenched at his side, jaw tight, he lay shaking, trying to close down his senses and let sleep come. He did not want to summon the darkness. All at once he was afraid of it, afraid of the voice that would pour into his mind as smoothly as oil. Yet in the end, it came to him. He saw it first as a tiny black point in his mind, then it began to swell. He fought it, tried to fill his mind with light, tried to banish the dark with ritual gesture and curse. But inexorably it grew, billowed, until he seemed to stand in vast darkness, and the voice spoke to him, gently, patiently. "Why do you fear me, you of all Dwayo Masters, Lovelane the Mighty? All I want to do is aid you, to be your friend and ally. I came to sorrow with you, that so clever a plan went astray. You almost trapped Rodri today."
"Who are you?"
"A friend, and naught more. I have information for you. That silver dagger is the key to everything. You have to kill him before you can kill Rodri. I've been meditating and doing deep workings, my friend, and I've seen that the forces of Weird are at work here."
"Well and good. But who are you?"
The voice chuckled once. The blackness was gone. Lovelane lay there sweating for a moment and blessed what he had just cursed, the normal human noise of the army around him. Then he got up and left the tent to find Corbin's captain. He wanted to give him some special orders about this wretched silver dagger. Cullen came awake suddenly to find Sliggan hunkering down next to him. The wheel of the stars showed that it was close to dawn.
"Old Nevin just woke me," Sliggan said. "Corbin's army is getting ready to ride. Those dishonorable scum are going to make a dawn strike on us."
"Oh, are they now? Well then, my lord, we'd best pull a trick of our own."
When Cullen explained, Sliggan roared with laughter and woke up half the camp. The provision carts were already drawn up in a circle some 100 yards from camp, with the horses in their midst. Half the men readied the horses, while the others arranged saddlebags and gear under blankets to look like sleeping men. Then the armed and ready warband hid in the circle of carts, each man crouched beside his horse. To the rear huddled the servants and such like. Up in front stood the spearmen, ready to fill the gap in the circle once the horsemen rode out. Cullen took his place beside Sliggan just as the sky was lightening to a grey like mole's fur. In the chilly dawn, the army trotted closer and closer across the wide meadow. The news whispered through Rodri's men, "Get ready to mount and ride." At the far end of the meadow, Corbin's army drew up, paused for a moment, then began to sort itself out into a long line for the charge. Cullen began to wonder if they would see through his ruse. If the camp truly was asleep, by now someone would have been wakened by the noise of the distant jingling of tack. Walking their horses, the army came on, then broke into a trot, on, and suddenly they were galloping, charging to the sound of horns and war cries, straight for what they thought was the sleeping camp. The javelins sped ahead of them into the fake bodies on the ground.
"Now!"
Rodri screamed. There was an awkward shoving scramble in the narrow space as the warband swung itself into the saddle. Shrieking at the top of his lungs, Sliggan led out the squad of lords, and their men surged out after them in ranks of 4 abreast. Out ahead, the startled enemies were swearing and yelling as they tried to check the momentum of their charge and wheel to face this unexpected attack. As they galloped, Rodri's army sent their javelins on ahead of them. Horses reared and men screamed as Corbin's line broke into a disorganized mob.
"For Corbin!"
Cullen yelled, and he glanced back to make sure that Rodri was safely in the midst of the squad. Sligan wheeled his unit along the battle's edge just as the main armies hit. Horses dodged and reared as the two lines passed through each other like the fingers of one hand woven through those of the other. The riders turned them and swung back to break off into single combats or the occasional clot of fighting. Cullen stayed close to Sligan as the Lord led his squad around the field. Suddenly Sligan howled in triumph and kicked his horse to a gallop. Taken by surprise, Cullen fell a little behind as the Lord charged for his prey, a Lord with a green and tan blazon on his shield. Cullen heard Rodri's crazed berserker laugh sweep by him as the unit charged after Sligan. Riding hard, Cullen galloped after, but a man on a black cut him off, coming straight for him. As Cullen wheeled his horse, he got a glimpse of pouchy eyes and a dark stubbled chin under the enemy's helm. They swung, parried, trading blow for blow while he swore and yelled, and Cullen stayed dead silent, flicking away the enemy's sword with his own until in frustration the man tried a hard side swing that left his right unguarded. Cullen caught the strike on his shield and slashed in to catch him solidly on the right arm. Blood welled through his mail as the bone snapped. Grunting in pain, he dropped the sword and tried to turn his horse. Cullen let him go. He wanted Corbin. Ahead, Sligan's squad was mobbing around Corbin and some of Corbin's men, fighting ably to defend their lord. Cullen urged his horse forward, just as a fresh squad of green and tans galloped up.
"My lord Sligan, the flank!"
But the enemy was riding for him, not for Sligan. Cullen wrenched his horse around to meet the enemy charge, just as they swarmed around and enveloped him from all sides.
"The silver dagger! Get him!"
Cullen had no time to wonder why they were mobbing a silver dagger as if he were a noble lord. A blow cracked him across the left shoulder from the flank as the man in front of him angled for a stab. Cullen parried it barely in time and twisted away, slashing out at the man pushing in from his right. They could get four on him at once, and all he could do was twist and duck and slash back and forth. He caught a strike on his shield that cracked the wood, then he felt a stab like fire on his left side. Over the screaming battle noise, he heard Rodri's laugh, coming closer. Gasping with pain, Cullen killed the man in front of him with a slash to the throat that collapsed his windpipe and knocked him off his horse, but there was another enemy waiting to take his place. A hard blow made fire run down Cullen's left arm. He twisted in the saddle and tried to parry, but the shield dragged his broken arm down. With a curse, he let it fall and twisted back to fend a blow from the right. Rodri's laugh sounded louder, but still too far away. Suddenly, the man at Cullen's left flank screamed, and his horse reared to fall dead. Something sped through the air past Cullen's face. The arrow pierced the mail on the enemy at his right with a gout of blood. The man tried to turn his horse, but another arrow caught him in the back, and he went down with a cry. The mob peeled off and tried to flee, but they turned straight into Rodri's men, charging to meet them. In the last clear moment left to him, Cullen saw Jennatar riding up with a curved bow in his hands. Cullen dropped his sword and tried to hold onto the saddle peak, but his gauntlets were slippery with his own blood. He stared at them in amazement as darkness came out of nowhere, and he fell, sliding over his horse's neck. It seemed that he was trying to swim to the surface of a deep blue river. Every now and then he drew close, he could see light ahead and hear what sounded like Nevin's voice, but every time a vast eddying billow would sweep him back down where he would choke, drowning in the blue. All at once he heard a voice, mocking him, a smooth little voice that poured into his mind like oil. It seemed that the voice was coming closer out of the billowing blue stuff around him. At that point he noticed a glowing silver cord that stretched from his oddly insubstantial body down to somewhere. He couldn't see its destination. Another wave enveloped him in a shifting, sinking blueness. The voice poured over him again, taunting, mocking him for a dead man. Suddenly he saw Nevin, or a pale blue image of him, a ghost, a shadow. In whatever form, the old man was striding to meet him, and as he came, he was chanting in some peculiar language. The blue river seemed to slow, to hold steady. Nevin reached out and caught his hand. All at once, Cullen found himself awake. A solid, fleshly Nevin was leaning over him in sunlight. In spite of his warrior's will, Cullen moaned aloud from the pain burning down side and shoulder. When he tried to move, the splints on his left arm clattered on the wagon bed.
"Easy, my friend," Nevin said. "Lie still."
"Water?"
Someone slipped an arm under his head and raised it, then held a cup of water to his lips. He gulped it down.
"Want more?" Rodri said.
"I do."
Rodri helped him drink another cupful, then wiped his face with a wet rag.
"I tried to reach you in time," the lad said. "Please believe me, I tried to reach you."
"I know."
Cullen was puzzled by his urgency.
"What of Corbin?"
"Escaped. Don't let that trouble you now."
The sunny sky circled and swooped around him. He fell into the darkness, but this time it was only sleep. While servants carried Cullen away and laid another wounded man on the wagon bed, Nevin washed his bloody hands in a bucket of water. Only he knew how hard he'd had to fight to save Cullen's life. He was rather amazed at himself that he'd actually been able to go into a trance and stay standing up. A little green sprite crouched on the ground and solemnly watched as he dried his hands on a clean strip of cloth. Nevin risked whispering to her.
"You were right to warn me. My thanks to you and your friends."
The sprite grinned, showing blue pointed teeth, then vanished. If the wild folk hadn't warned him, Nevin might never have realized that someone was up on the higher plains, trying to drive Cullen's etheric double away from his body, and then snap the silver cord that bound him to life. Someone. Not Lovelane, but someone who stank of dark things, someone who was standing behind him, or perhaps even hiding behind him.
"You overreached yourself badly, my nasty little friend," Nevin said aloud. "Now I know you're there, and I'll recognize you when we meet again."
Just before dawn, Jill woke, tossed irritably in bed for a while, then got up and dressed. When she came down to the great hall, the servants were yawning as they took the sods off the fire and fanned the coals to life. Lady Levian was already seated at the head of the honor table. When Jill made her a bow, Levian waved her over to sit beside her.
"So, child, you had trouble sleeping too?"
"I did, Your Grace. I usually do when Dar's off to war."
A servant hurried over with bowls of steaming barley porridge and butter. While Jill and Levian ate, the men on fort guard began trickling in twos and threes, yawning and chivying the servant lasses. One of them must have tripped or such like, because from behind her Jill heard the clatter and ring of a scabbard striking against a table. She started to turn round to look, but the noise rang out again and again, like a bell tolling, louder, ever louder, until she heard a battle raging, the clash and clang of sword on shield, the whinnying of horses, men screaming and cursing. She heard her own voice too, babbling of what she saw. As indeed she did see it, spread out below her in the meadow, as if she hovered over the battle like a gull on the wind. Rodri was trying to force his way into a mob around one rider, and he was howling with laughter, utterly berserk, as he swung and parried with a blood-running sword. The man inside the mob could barely swing. He turned desperately in the saddle. Cullen. Jill heard her voice rise to a shriek and sob as Jennatar's arrows sped past her father and one by one began to bring his enemies down. At last, Rodri was through, leaping off his horse in time to catch Cullen as he fell. And the battle noise faded away into the sound of her own sobs and Levian's frightened voice, barking orders to the servants. Jill looked up straight into Levian's face and realized that her ladyship had her arms tight round her. Leaning over her was Dwiggin, captain of the fort guard.
"Your Grace!" he burst out. "What?"
"Dwayoma, you dolt!"
Levian said.
"What else could it be? And her a friend of Nevin's and all?"
Jill's tears stopped, wiped away by the icy realization that Levian was speaking the truth. She felt herself shaking like an aspen in the wind, as a servant ran over with a bit of elderberry wine. Levian forced her to drink it.
"Jill, is your father dead?"
"He's not, but he's as close to it as he can be. Your Grace, please, I beg you. I've got to write to him. What if he dies and I've never gotten to say farewell?"
"Well, here, my heart aches for you, but you'll never be able to find the army."
Won't I, Your Grace?
Levian shuddered.
Besides, Jill went on, that battle was hard fought. Lord Rodgy's going to need as many men of the Fort Guard as you can send him. I know I can lead them straight there. I truly do know it. They're only some 20 miles away. Please, Your Grace.
Levian sighed and stood up from the bench, then ran shaking hands through her hair.
Done, then, she said at last. Duigan, get 30 men ready to ride straight away.
As Jill ran up to her chamber to get her gear, she was cursing her weird, hating herself and hating the Dwayomer for taking her over. But for her beloved father's sake, she would use any weapon that came her way. There were times when the depth of his pride surprised even Hrodri himself. His back hurt so badly from the kicks and bruises of the day before that he could barely stand, and now that the berserker fit had left him, he was feeling every new blow that he'd gotten, but he drove himself to accompany Sligan on a tour through the somber camp. The men were bringing in the dead from the battlefield. Everywhere, Rodri heard men cursing or keening as they recognized dead friends. They needed to see their Cavradoc on his feet.
"Do we call this a victory or not?" Rodri said.
"Corbin's the one who fled, eh?"
Down near the supply wagons, Jennatar and Calendario were standing guard over the prisoners, who slouched on the ground in twos or threes, clinging together for comfort. Most were wounded, but they'd have to wait for the Chirurgeons to finish with Rodri's men.
"Any news of Colin?" Jennatar asked.
"Still the same."
Rodri wearily rubbed the side of his face.
"I came to thank you."
"No thanks needed. He did his best to save the life of a friend of mine. I would have loosed more shafts, but I was afraid of hitting you and your men. I came close enough to killing Cullen as it was."
"Better you than one of those scum."
"Well, you pulled him out in the end, eh?"
Sligan laid a fatherly hand on Rodri's arm.
"All that matters, eh? In the laps of the gods now."
Rodri nodded. He could never explain, not even to himself in any clear way, just why it was so important that he be the man who saved Cullen. He should have pulled him out of the mob just so they would have been even on that favour. It was important, perhaps the most important thing in his life, that each owe the other nothing, and yet he couldn't say why. His tunic red with gore, Aderyn trotted up with a couple of servants laden with medical supplies.
"Your men are all tended, Lord Cavradoc, but Nevin said to tell you that Lord Dormir just died."
Rodri tossed back his head and keened. Now a noble-born man had died for his sake. Sligan tightened his grip on Rodri's arm and swore under his breath.
"I'll be working on the prisoners," Aderyn said.
Beckoning to the servants, he walked away, looking for those who were the worst off.
"Ah, by the hells," Jennatar said. "I still don't see how Corbin got away. I was sure you and Dormir had him trapped."
"So was I."
Sligan shook his head in furious bafflement.
"It was foul, stinking, evil luck, that's all. Lots of little things like Dormir's sword breaking. And then that horse went down in front of mine and I couldn't reach him. Luck, ill luck."
One of the prisoners laughed, an hysterical mutter under his breath. When Rodri swung around to look at him, he flung up one arm and cringed back. His blonde hair was crusted with blood.
"I'm not going to strike a wounded man," Rodri said. "But what are you laughing about?"
"My apologies, I didn't even mean to. But it wasn't luck that let our lord escape. By the gods, you'll never kill Corbin. It's the demon-shot sorcerer. He made a prophecy, you see."
"A what?"
"Lovelane made this prophecy. He got it from his scrying stone."
The prisoner paused to lick dry lips.
"It says that Lord Corbin can never be slain in battle except by a sword. But he'll never be slain by any man's hand. It's true, my lord. You saw what happened on the field today. It must be true."
Sligan's florid face turned pale. Aderyn turned to listen.
"Aderyn," Rodri said, "is there any truth in this?"
"The lad's not lying to you, my lord. So Lovelane must have made a prophecy."
"That's not what I meant."
"Does the Cavradoc really want me to tell him if the prophecy's a true one?"
"It must be, or you'd be assuring me that it's false."
Aderyn gave a sigh that was more like a groan.
"I'm sworn never to lie, but at times I wish I'd never made that vow."
Rodri turned and blindly walked away. He felt his death lay a heavy arm around his shoulder and walk with him. Puffing a little, Sliggan caught up with him near the edge of the camp.
"Now here, I don't believe a word of it, eh? Doesn't matter if it's true. Lot of horse shit."
"Is it now? If a Derren can turn himself into an owl, why can't he know the true or false of a prophecy?"
Sliggan started to reply, then looked away and chewed furiously on his moustache.
"It's a cursed strange feeling, being doomed by Dwayoma," Rodri went on, "and doomed I am. When Corbin chooses to cut his way to me, no one's going to be able to stop him. When we face off, I won't be able to kill him."
"Only one thing to do, eh? Send you back to Cannabane."
"Never. And what good will my life do me if I spent it as a shamed man?"
All at once, Rodri felt his berserker's laugh welling out of his mouth. He tossed back his head and howled until Sliggan grabbed him and shook him into silence. By late afternoon, the news was all over the camp. Rodri had never had the experience before of seeing an army's morale crumble like a bit of dried mud rubbed between a man's fingers. It wasn't a pretty sight. Although the noble-born blustered and swore like Sliggan, they looked at Rodri with a horrified pity. Rodri walked through the camp and tried speaking personally to the men in the hopes of wiping away a fear so strong that he could smell it. At first, some of the men tried to jest with him, but as the afternoon wore on, they drew back as if he were a leper, this man whom the gods had cursed, lest his ill luck rub off on them. To spare them the sight of him, Rodri walked to the edge of the camp with Amir, the only man in his warband who seemed glad of his company. Blonde and bland-looking, Amir at 16 was new to the warband, but he had more honour than most.
"My lord, when we face Corbin again, I'll fight right next to you. I swore I'd follow you to the other lands, and I will."
"I honour you for it, but there's no need. I'm going to challenge Corbin to single combat and let him put an end to it."
"What?"
"Just what I said. Why by the hell should the rest of you die in a hopeless cause? We'll never kill Corbin, and so, well and good, once he kills me, the rebellion's over."
Amir turned to him with tears in his eyes.
"Speak well of me after I'm dead, will you?" Rodri said.
His mouth working, Amir walked a few steps away. As Rodri looked down the road, he saw a small troop of horsemen coming up from the south. He waited until he was reasonably sure that Amir could see them, then pointed them out. As the troop came closer, Rodri could pick out the colours on their shields, a mixed lot from his various allies, and Jill at their head.
"By the hells, it's the Cannabane Fort Guard. What are they doing here?"
As soon as she dismounted, Jill enlightened him on the point.
"Reinforcements, my lord. I saw the battle in a vision, and you know I'm not daft because there was one, wasn't there? So, by the goddess herself, where's my father?"
Amir started to giggle, so loudly and so high that Rodri grabbed and shook him.
"Pull yourself together. We've seen enough Dwayoma to take a little more."
"It's not that, my lord. It's Jill."
"What? Of course it's Jill. I can see her."
"Not that, my lord. Look, look at Jill. So Corbin won't die by any man's hand, will he?"
Her thumbs hooked into her sword belt. Jill frowned at them as if she were thinking they'd both gone daft. Her stance, her gesture, were so much those of a fighting man that suddenly Rodri saw Amir's meaning. He threw back his head and howled with laughter until Jill could stand it no longer.
"By every god and his wife as well, have I ridden into a camp filled with madmen?"
"My apologies. I'll take you to your father straight away. But Jill, oh Jill, I should fall to the ground and kiss your feet."
"Has my lord Cavradoc been hit on the head? What is all this?"
"I'll explain after you've seen Cullen. Silver Dagger, I've got a hire for you."
Rather than let Cullen lie outside with the rest of the wounded, Rodri had turned his tent over to the man who had saved his life. When Jill came in, Cullen was asleep in Rodri's blankets, with his bound and splinted left arm out of the covers. His hair was streaked with dried blood. As she knelt down beside him, Jill wept in a scatter of tears. When she ran her hand through his hair, he sighed in his sleep and turned his head toward her.
"Jill?"
It was Nevin, ducking under the tent flap.
"I heard you were here." "Of course I am. Did you think I wouldn't know when Dar was hurt?"
Nevin smiled briefly and knelt beside her.
"Answer me truly," Jill said. "Is he going to die?"
Nevin considered for so long that her heart pounded.
"I doubt it," the herdman said at last. "That's as honest as I can be. He nearly did die under my hands, but that was the shock, and it's passed off now. Your Dar is a very, very strong man, but there's a deep cut on his side. If it goes septic..."
He let the words hang there. Jill sat back on her heels and wondered why she felt so numb, as if she had no body at all.
"He won't wake for some time now," Nevin went on. "Rodri wants to speak with you. Well, I'd best let you hear it from him. I'll stay with Cullen until you return."
Jill ducked out of the tent into a crowd. In quiet ranks, the entire army stood round the tent. Every man looked at her in the same peculiar way, worshipful, really, as if she were the goddess Epona come to visit them as in the old tales, yet not one said a word to her. When Amir escorted her to Rodri, the men followed, as silently as a legion of the dead. Out in front of Sligan's tent stood the noble-born, staring at her so intently that Jill wished she could just run away. Rodri made her a bow.
"I've no doubt you can swing that sword you wear. Have you ever thought of swinging it in battle?"
"Many a time, my lord, but Dar's always said me nay."
"He's not going to get a chance this time," Eddar muttered.
"Oh, here, my lords," Jill said. "Are you as badly outnumbered as all that?"
"Not in the least."
Rodri paused, chewing on his lower lip.
"I've got a cursed strange thing to tell you."
"Now here."
Sligan stepped forward.
"How well does a lass know how to fight? I won't have a helpless woman slaughtered. Don't care how desperate we are. Honour of the thing, eh?"
Jill glanced around and saw the servants off to one side, standing ready with dinner for the noble-born.
"My lord Sligan is the very soul of honour," she said. "But if he'd be so kind as to fetch me one of those apples?"
With a puzzled shrug, Sligan did as she asked.
"If you'll stand behind me, my lord," Jill went on, "and throw that apple up into the air on the count of three."
Jill drew her sword and held it point down while she waited for the count. On three, she spun around, the sword flashing up as the sight of the falling apple filled her vision. Without any conscious aim, she hit it perfectly. Two nearly equal halves of the apple fell at Sligan's feet. The warband surged forward, cheering, yelling out her name, until Rodri screamed them into silence.
"By the hells!" Sligan sputtered. "Couldn't do that myself, eh? Well..."
"My thanks, my lord," Jill said. "But don't let me give myself airs. My father can cut one into quarters like that."
Rodri laughed, but it was a mad sort of delight brimming in his eyes.
"And why do you want me to ride with you?" Jill said.
"Because of Dweoma, Silver Dagger. Lovelane's made a prophecy about Corbin, and Adairan's had to admit that it's true. It runs this wise. Corbin will never die in battle but by a sword, and yet he'll never die by any man's hand."
"Oh-ho! They always say that every Dweoma prophecy's like a sword blade."
Jill held hers up flat in illustration.
"It's sharp on both sides."
The cheers of the army went to Jill's head like mead. When Sligan yelled at them, the men dispersed, laughing and jesting as they headed back to their campfires. Jill sheathed her sword, then turned to Rodri, who was holding a silver piece to pledge her the hire.
"If you take my coin, you're pledging yourself to die for me if need be. Do you truly want to do it, Jill? Never would I wheedle and plead."
"And because you won't, I'll take it."
Jill held out her hand.
"But if I kill Corbin for you, you're giving me one of those western hunters I saw in your herd."
With a laugh, Rodri dropped the coin into her palm.
"Done. And you're a true silver dagger, sure enough."
As Jill pocketed the coin, she glanced at Rodri's face and their eyes met. Suddenly she realized that she knew him to the very core of her soul, that somehow, in some strange way, she'd seen that crazed berserker's smile on his face 1,000 times before. It seemed that he must have recognized her, too, because suddenly his smile faded and he stared deep into her eyes, as if he were trying to read some secret hidden there. Abruptly he turned away and beckoned to the servants.
"Bring mead. so we can pledge my Avenger.
Your what? Sliggan snapped.
Well, by every god and his horses behind, Rodri said, and that daft grin was back. Do you think I can ask a lass to save my life? I'll cut Jill's way to Corbin, who'll kill me, no doubt, and then she can end the rebellion by killing him. Swearing, yelling at the top of their lungs, the nobleborn tried to argue Rodri down, but he stood firm, his eyes half mad with honour. Jill grabbed his manservant by the arm.
Run, get Nevin. He's in your lord's tent.
As he followed the servant back, Nevin was cursing Rodri in his very soul. Although his heart ached at the thought of Jill riding to war, he knew that he could never stop her. He had, however, expected that Rodri would have the sense to let her keep him alive. When he reached the arguing crowd, he found Jill standing off to one side. Her eyes pleaded with him for help.
"Now what's all this, you stupid dolt?" Nevin said to Rodri. "Use the wit you were born with."
"Wit has naught to do with it." Rodri tossed his head. "It's a matter of honour. I can ask a woman to kill the rebel I'll never be able to kill myself, but I'll live shamed if I ask her to save my life. I'd rather die."
"Methinks, Lord Cavredoc, that you're cutting the point of honour far too fine."
"Am I now? A Maelwith I am, blood and bone, and the honour of my clan is known to every lord in Deveri. Cursed if I'll put the slightest smear on that name."
When Rodri set his hand on his hips and glared at him, Nevin growled in utter frustration.
"You put me in mind of an old saying. When a Maelwith lord starts splitting fine points of honour, it takes three gods to make him hold his tongue."
"Then maybe you'd best start calling on them."
Nevin grabbed him by the shirt and hauled him close.
"Now you listen to me, Rodri Maelwith."
He gave him a little shake.
"There's more at stake here than your cursed honour. Have you forgotten the Dwayomer?"
Rodri turned a little pale.
"I see you had," Nevin went on. "Your weird is Eldith's weird. You've been marked by Dwayomer from the moment you were born, you little dolt. Why do you think I was always hanging around your court? I'm not letting you throw your life away now. If I blasted, we'll have to ensorcel you."
Rodri started trembling.
"Think," Nevin snapped. "What is the worst dishonour? Letting Jill do what the Dwayomer drew her here to do, or heaping some strange ruin upon Eldith because you were too stubborn to fulfil your weird?"
Rodri turned his head and glanced this way and that, as if appealing for help from the frightened lords round them. When Nevin let him go, he stepped back sharply.
"Either you swear to me on the honour of the Maelwith that you'll fight to save your life, not lose it," Nevin said, levelly, "or I'll take steps here and now."
"I'll swear it."
"On the honour of the Maelwiths?"
"On the honour of the Maelwiths."
"Good. Then I'll leave you to your dinner, my lord. Jill, come with me."
As Nevin strode away, Jill hurried to catch up, too frightened to disobey.
"So much for Rodri. I'm most sincerely pleased that you had the wit to send for me."
"I thought you'd know what to say, but truly, I never dreamt that Rodri had such a splendid weird. Here, was it really Dwayomer that drew me here at just the right time?"
"Of course. Do you doubt it?"
Jill stopped walking, and her mouth went a little slack.
"I know all these strange things must ache your heart, child, but Adarin and I are here to deal with them. Go, tend your father. I'll come look in on him in a bit."
Jill ran off so fast that he knew she was terrified. Although he would have liked to have comforted her, he had a crucial piece of work at hand. By then, twilight had faded into night, and the astral tides, which influence the flux of forces in the etheric plane, had settled down after their change from the dominance of fire to the dominance of water, marking the coming of night. Nevin found Adarin, and together they left the camp. About half a mile away was a stretch of woodland that would give them the privacy they needed.
"Do you think our enemy will truly try to scout us out?" Adarin said. "After all, he got a taste of your power this afternoon.
But he never got a chance to look me over. He fled as soon as I started the banishings. Well, I can't know, of course, but I intend to stand guard anyway."
"It's doubtless for the best.
So, you were right, and there is Dark Dwayoma mixed up in this.
I don't know how deeply it's mixed. My guess now is that this fellow is trying to work on the edges of things. Or he was. He betrayed himself nicely this afternoon.
And why was he trying to kill a silver dagger anyway? I should think our Cullen would be beneath his notice.
So would I. Nevin hesitated, considering. I can only suppose it was because Cullen's the best guard Rodri could have. Here, it's been obvious from the first that killing Rodri is the true point of this rebellion. The rebel lords may think that they're getting him out of the way to lower their wretched dues, but there are only so many tools in the paws of this dark master. I'm fairly certain that Lovelane is only a tool as well. Here, you trained the lad. Does he have the power to make a true scene prophecy about Corbin's death?
He doesn't.
Well then, where did he get it from? I'll wager someone told him. And another thing, Lovelane has no way of knowing that Rodri is crucial to Eldith's weird, and no reason to kill him either. I think our real enemy's been subtly influencing Lovelane for months, using him like a stick to stir up a stench in a fetid pond.
And why does the Dark Master want Rodri dead?
I don't know. Nevin allowed himself a grim smile. There he has the advantage of us. It's the Dark Dwayoma that's always brooding about Weird and the future, not men like us who have the light to trust in. I've been content to wait for more omens from the Great Ones about Rodri's Weird, and let them reveal it to me in their own good time. I'll wager our enemy's been brooding and prying into closed things, and that he has a very good reason to want Rodri out of the way. Whatever it is, it bodes ill for Eldith.
Adaren nodded slowly. In the darkness it was impossible to see his face, but the whole slumped set of his body showed his grief. When they reached the woodland, they found a clearing near the edge. Nevin lay down, went into his trance, and transferred into the body of light. He flew up slowly, circling the woods, a tangled reddish glow of vegetable auras, until Adaren's pure gold aura was a mere spark far below. This far from the earth, the etheric was an eerie place. Unanchored by any living beings, the blue light shifted and swirled. At times it seemed to glow as thick as sea fog, then suddenly thinned again to reveal the silver glare of the stars above. At last, after an untellable length of time, Nevin saw what he was expecting. Far away to the east, a cluster of wild folk appeared, circling around a central point as if they were curiously watching a visitor to their plane. All at once they vanished, either out of terror or because they'd been banished by someone who knew how to dispel them. Nevin summoned the wild folk who knew him and sent them off to distract the possible enemy, though with a warning to keep their distance, then followed. The ruse worked. He was quite close before the enemy saw him coming. And an enemy he was. No one but a Dark Dwayoma man would have fashioned such a showy and pretentious body of light. A figure cloaked in a black hooded robe, hung about with sigils and signs, and belted with a strip of darkness from which hung two severed heads. The figure retreated a few paces, then hovered uncertainly. Nevin could make out a face inside the hood. Two eyes that glowed with the life of the soul inside the simulacrum, and a mouth that worked constantly, forming soundless words. Wherever his body was, it was talking automatically and relaying information to a listener.
"An apprentice, are you?"
Nevin sent out the thought to his consciousness.
"Was your master too much of a coward to risk facing me?"
The figure flew away from him, but as Nevin started after, it held steady. From the terror in the apprentice's eyes, Nevin could guess that his master was forcing him to stay and face the enemy.
"Who are you?"
The apprentice sent out a tremulous thought. Nevin debated, then decided that the truth might be the best stick he had for driving these hounds away.
"Tell your master that in this plane I'm known as the Master of Aether, but on the physical, I'm no one at all."
Nevin saw the mouth working, then the apprentice sent out a thought wave of sheer terror. The simulacrum swooped to one side, tumbled back, then began to break up, the black robe shredding and dissolving as the hood fell away. thrashing desperately before him, was the simple, etheric double of a young man, and the silver cord that should have bound him to his body was broken, dangling from his navel. The master had killed his apprentice, rather than risk letting Nevin follow him back to their hiding place.
"You poor little fool,"
Nevin thought to him.
"Do you see now what kind of master you trusted? You have one last chance to repent. I beg you, call on the light and forswear the dark path now."
In a thought-sending of pure rage, the apprentice raced away, swooping, tumbling, but rising ever higher into the billows of the blue light. Nevin let him go, but sorrowfully. He would have liked to have redeemed that soul. But soon enough the Lords of Weird would catch the apprentice and drag him, kicking and screaming, to the Hall of Light. How they called judgment upon him was no longer Nevin's concern. Nevin followed the silver cord back to his body and slipped in, slapping his hand thrice on the ground to close the working. When he sat up, Aderyn leaned close, listening carefully as he told the story.
"I think me that our enemy is someone who knows you well," Aderyn said.
"So it seems. Well, that apprentice of his is better off dead. He won't be getting himself deeper into that black muck."
"True spoken. If the master is that terrified of you, I doubt if he'll come sniffing around here again tonight."
"He won't be able to. Losing an apprentice is a hard blow for one of the Dark Ones. The masters feed off their vitality, you see, with an etheric link. I'll wager he's sick and shaking right now. Good."
Aderyn shuddered. Like most Wayoma folk in the kingdom, he'd had little contact with the masters of the dark art. But Nevin was master of the Aether, set like a guard on the border of the kingdom's soul, on constant watch against unclean things that few of those he guarded knew existed. He stood up and began brushing the leaves and dirt off his clothes.
"Let's get back to camp. I want to set a special seal over Rodri's aura."
Some miles away, Lovelane lay in his tent and tried to sleep. He twisted this way and that, silently cursed the men making noise outside, and even considered drinking himself blind with mead. He was so exhausted that his body felt like a sack of stones, but every time he drifted off, some thought or image would jerk his mind awake. Finally, he surrendered and tried to summon the darkness. He imagined the point of black in his mind, then willed it to swell and spread. It merely vanished. Although he tried for hours, the blackness never came to him.
"We're going to have to let the men spend a day in camp," Sliggin said. "All there is to it, eh? Yesterday's scrap tore the heart out of this army."
"You're right enough," Rodri said, "but it aches my heart to just sit here when Corbin's so close and we've got Jill." "The morrow will see the end to it," Peridir broke in. "Corbin can't move any more than we can. His losses were worse than ours."
In the cool grey dawn, the noble-born were having a council of war over their breakfast. Aderyn had told them that Corbin's dispirited troops were camped some 5 miles to the north, just an easy ride away, but Rodri knew that Sliggin was right. When the council broke up, Rodri had the grim job of composing a letter to go home with Lord Dalmir's body. His men and all the others were already buried out in the field where they'd fallen. When he took the letter over to Dalmir's manservant, who would accompany the body, he found the men from Dalmir's warband waiting for him. Their captain, Maia, knelt before him.
"A boon, Lord Cavredoc,"
Maia said.
"By rights, we should go home with our lord. Let us stay. We want vengeance, my lord."
Rodri hesitated, debating. Technically, these men now rode for Dalmir's 9-year-old son, who should have been consulted over such a breach of custom.
"Please, my lord," Maia went on. "Dweoma killed our lord, and we want to help the Dweoma put an end to Corbin. I know you're thinking about our lord's lad, but what son wouldn't want his father avenged?" "True spoken. Granted, then. Ride with me and my men, and you'll be riding straight for Corbin."
The men spontaneously cheered him. After he saw Dalmir's body with its spare honour guard of 2 wounded men on its way, Rodri headed for his tent to look in on Cullen. On the way he met Nevin, whose arms were full of medical supplies.
"I'm just going to change the dressings on Cullen's wounds," Nevin said. "You'll have to wait if you want a word with him.
Here, lad, I don't want you telling him what Jill's up to. He's too weak to hear it.
Well and good, then. By the gods, I hadn't truly thought of what he might think about all this.
Indeed. His lordship might spend a moment or two thinking every now and then.
But here, what's Cullen going to say when he asks for her on the day of the battle and finds her gone?
Oh, he's taken care of that himself. The man's as stubborn as a bear, I swear it. When he woke this morning, he was as grateful as ever a man could be to see her, and in the next breath, he's ordering her to go straight back to Cannobane so she wouldn't be in danger.
Well, that's honourable of him. After all, he loves his daughter.
So he does.
And Nevin, oddly enough, looked troubled.
Oh, truly, so he does.
Rodri followed Nevin over to the tent in the hopes that Jill would take the chance to get herself some breakfast, and indeed, she came out a few minutes after Nevin went in. They went first to the supply wagons, where Rodri drew rations for her, then walked away from camp to an open spot in the sunny meadow. When they sat down together, Rodri was thinking that he'd never wanted a woman as much as he wanted Jill. Every now and then she smiled at him in a way that gave him hope.
"You know, Jill," Rodri said at last, "you truly are a falcon, and my heart's just like a little bird caught in your claws."
"Oh, here, my lord, you hardly know me."
"And how long does it take a falcon to stoop and capture?"
Jill stared at him as if she couldn't believe her ears. Rodri smiled and moved a little closer.
"Well, come now. You must know how beautiful you are. I'll wager that all along the long road, men sighed when you wandered on your way."
"If they did, they wouldn't have dared tell me about it. Dar made sure of that. Besides, if I've had men sighing over me, which I doubt from the bottom of my heart, you've had a few lasses do the same over you. What about the soapmaker's daughter?"
"Oh, by the hells, how do you know about her?"
"Your lady mother made a point of telling me when I was at Cannobane."
"Curse her! What? Why?"
"She pointed out that I was beautiful too, and I think me that she knows his lordship very well. I may be a silver dagger, my lord, but there's only one way I earn my hire."
Rodri felt himself blush.
"Oh, ye gods," he said at last, "you must despise me."
"I don't, but I don't want one of your bastards."
Rodri flopped onto his stomach and studied the grass, which had suddenly become profoundly interesting.
"When we ride out," Jill said, "Nevin told me to camp with a Derrin, and I'm following his orders."
"You've made your cursed point. Don't pour vinegar into my wounds, will you?"
Rodri heard her get up and walk away. For a long time he lay in the grass and wondered at himself, that he would be so close to tears over a lass he barely knew. Nevin was walking back to the wagons after tending the wounded when he heard Jill hail him. As he waited for her to catch up, he noticed that all the men in the camp looked up when she passed by. Some rose to bow to her, others called out her name like a prayer. They saw her as a Dwayoma talisman, he realized, and one that at last, after so many terrifying things, they could understand. He also realized that if he did try to keep her out of the battle, as he was sorely tempted to do, Rodri would have a mutiny on his hands. If only Callon Dariel or Jennatar had trained with a sword, he thought bitterly. But he knew that neither of those two archers stood a chance against a warrior lord like Corbin, for all that a sword in an elven hand would have slashed Lovelane's prophecy to shreds, and there was no time to send west for an elven swordsman.
"Did you want to speak with me, child?" Nevin said to Jill when she came up. "Is summat wrong with your father?"
"Nought, truly. Oh, well, nought's changed for the worse. I just wanted a private word with you."
They strolled past the wagons and out into the meadowland, where there was no one around to overhear. Jill looked badly troubled, and she stood in silence, staring at the ground for a long time before she finally blurted out what she had to say.
"Do you remember how I knew that Dar had been wounded? Well, I saw the whole cursed thing in a vision, and it came on me from nowhere."
Nevin caught his breath in surprise. He'd been assuming that she'd just had a sudden intuitive knowledge of his danger.
"Will I keep doing things like that?"
she went on, and her voice was shaking.
"I don't want to. I don't want the Dwayoma.
It's haunted me all my wretched life, but I never asked for it. It's all very well for such as you, but I don't want it.
No one can force you to take the Dwayoma.
Nevin hated every bitter truth he spoke, but vows forced him to tell them.
You have raw talent, certainly, but if you don't train it, it'll simply fade away, much as your legs would wither if you never walked.
She smiled in an evident relief that wrung his heart, then let the smile fade.
But what about the wild folk? Will I stop seeing them too?
Oh, no doubt. You know, many children can see the wild folk, but they lose the talent by the time they're 10 or so. It's odd that you still can, truly, without having been trained.
I don't want to lose them. They were the only friends I had on the long road.
Her voice ached with remembered loneliness, and at that moment she looked as much a lass as a woman, caught on the edge of her childhood.
Well, Jill, it's your choice. No one can make it for you, not your Da, not me.
She nodded, scuffing at the grass with the toe of her riding boot, then suddenly turned and raced back to camp. As he watched her go, Nevin cursed her and his weird both. Sharply, he reminded himself that she was just a young lass, overwhelmed by the strangeness of this eruption of Dwayoma into her life. Although his vows forbade him to argue or plead, he could become her friend, and in time she would see that the Dwayoma was in its own way perfectly natural, or he could hope she would. He felt profoundly weary as he walked back to camp, wondering if he'd ever pay back the debt he owed her by bringing her to the Dwayoma and her true weird. For her sake more than his own, he wished that he could make her see that she would never be truly happy unless she used the talents that were her birthright. Then, as he reached the camp, he saw her sitting with Genitar and Calendariel. If she would turn instinctively for comfort to a pair of elves, he had no reason to despair. Half laughing at himself, he went to look for Aderyn. Determined to put her talk with Nevin out of her mind, Jill watched as Genitar and Calendariel played a complicated game, something like dice. The pieces were tiny wooden pyramids, painted a different colour on each side, which they shook by the handful, then strewed out in a rough line. The order in which the colours appeared and how many there were of each determined who won the round. Finally, Genitas swept them up into a leather pouch.
"We're being awfully rude to Jill."
"Ha!" Calendariel said. "You're losing, and you know it. But truly, Jill, it's good to have a word with you. How's your father this morn?"
"As well as he can be. Nevin says he's doing better than he'd expected."
"Then that's splendid news," Genitar said. "I only wish I could have gotten within bowshot faster than I did."
Jill nodded miserably, wondering how she could bear to lie to her father when he lay wounded, even if she'd never wanted anything more in her life than this chance to ride to war.
"Ha!" Calendariel said. "Here comes our round-eared Cavradoc. I'll wager it's not us he wants a word with."
Jill looked as Rodri strolled up to them. In truth, it was her that he was watching, with one of his soft smiles on his handsome face. At times Jill hated him for being so handsome. Here was a man that she couldn't simply dismiss. Although she and Genitar got to their feet, Calendariel lounged insolently on the grass. Rodri turned to him with the smile gone.
"When the Cavradoc speaks to you, you stand."
"Oh, do I now?" Calendariel said. "What makes you think I ride at your orders?"
"You ride at my orders or you leave the army."
Slowly and deliberately, Calendariel rose, but he set his hands on his hips in a gesture far from respectful.
"Listen, lad, save your Eldith arrogance for others of your stinking kind. I came here with the Wise One of the West, and for no other reason than he asked me to."
"I don't give a pig's fart why you came. You're here now, and you follow my orders or leave."
Genitar sighed in irritation, then muttered something in Elvish, which Calendariel ignored. Rodri and the elf were staring each other down, both of them unblinking and tense. Jill thought of trying to say something conciliatory, but she suddenly knew, in a wordless way that ached with Dwayoma, that it was crucial for Rodri to have Calendariel's respect, and for more reasons than simple army discipline.
"If you have a bone to pick with me, round ear," Calendariel said at last, "then let's pick it clean between us. And now..."
"Now here." Genitar stepped forward. "He doesn't know how men duel in our lands."
"Oh, don't I now?" Rodri said, and he had a twisted little grin. "My uncle made Westfolk welcome at his court, and I've seen your folk before. You're on then, Cal."
In the middle of a growing crowd, they stripped off their shirts and faced off, Calendariel with his knife and Rodri with Genitar's, since his dagger blade was unfairly short. Jill's heart was pounding. She could see the livid bruises up and down Rodri's back, and she knew the injuries would slow him down. Calendariel began to circle, and Rodri moved with him. Both of them dropped to a crouch, circling in dead silence. Rodri fainted in. Calendariel sprang and slashed. Rodri twisted out of the way, barely in time. Again they circled slowly, eyes locked, until Calendariel fainted in. Rodri stepped back smoothly, then sprang from the side. Calendariel struck up from below, but Rodri's left hand moved so fast that Jill could barely see it, and caught the elf's dagger hand under the wrist, forcing it up, while the knife in his right flashed in the sun, then darkened with blood. Calendariel leapt back with a thin red cut dripping along his ribs.
"Do you ride at my orders?" Rodri snarled.
"I do." Calendariel lowered his knife. "Lord Cavredoc."
To the cheers of his men, Rodri wiped the knife off on his brigger leg, handed it to Genitar, then grabbed his shirt from the ground and strode off. As she watched him go, Jill realized that for all she liked Calendariel, she was glad that Rodri had won, that seeing him defeated would have ached her heart. She felt strangely guilty when she turned back to the elf, who was staunching the wound with his shirt while Genitar watched sourly.
"Our young lord's quick for a round ear," Calendariel remarked.
"So he is," Genitar snapped. "And now maybe you'll hold your ugly tongue. Hadaran warned us that he wanted no trouble, or have you forgotten that?"
"I hadn't, but I can't ride under a man who can't best me in a fight."
"No doubt you see it that way."
Genitar turned to Jill.
"Our Cal here's somewhat of a Cavredoc himself, back in our lands. I suppose when you're used to ordering hundreds of archers around, you find it hard to take another man's orders."
"Only a round ear's," Calendariel put in. "Don't I put up with your stinking arrogance all the time?"
Genitar laughed easily.
"Cavredoc or not," Jill said, "you'd best see Hadaran about that cut." "Oh, it's but a nick." Rodri held his hand. "He's not a bad man, truly, for a round ear. Besides, the owls are flying, scouting out our enemy. It makes the old man nervous, having our rebels so near at hand."
A river of blood flowed over Corbin's camp, ran slowly and thickly around the tents, eddied around the men, and lapped at the horses. Even though he knew it was only an out-of-control vision, it took Lovelane a long time to banish it, and even when the river ebbed away, it seemed that a rusty stain remained on everything it had touched. He pressed his hands between his thighs to hide how badly they shook, while he tried to listen to the council of war. The noble-born were arguing about something, but their words seemed torn by a wind from nowhere. Finally, he got up and left. As he walked through the camp, he could feel the hatred of the men like daggers in his back. Inside his tent, it was cool and mercifully quiet. The army was too dispirited and battle-weary to make much noise. Lovelane lay down on his blankets and breathed deeply and slowly until his hands stopped shaking. He was going to have to summon the darkness. Even though they were out of control, his vision showed him that everything was falling apart, and he knew that somewhere in the darkness was a power that could help him. He shut his eyes, let himself go limp, then pictured the darkness in his mind and called to it. The image was only a picture. No power flowed. No darkness came. He tried again and again, but he could summon not even the tiny point of black that was the starting of the true dark. All at once he knew. He had been deserted. His strange ally who had come unbidden was gone, utterly gone beyond calling. He opened his eyes and felt himself shaking, sweating. For a moment he was as confused as a child who goes to sleep in its mother's arms only to wake in a strange bed.
What had he done, involving himself in this petty rebellion, when he should have been running, travelling east as fast as he could to get beyond Adarin's reach? Suddenly, he remembered the murder, the elf he had slain over a scrying stone. Adarin was only a few bare miles away, and he